am going to tell a story about crushes because I get them a lot. And I grew up here in Baltimore, in the Baltimore metropolitan area, and I developed at a young age a crush on a lot of buildings, and I flirted with lots of buildings here in Baltimore, but really I fell in love, heavy duty in love, with the architecture of Washington, D.C., and one place in particular. It's a place called Langston Terrace Dwellings, and it's this amazing, beautiful public housing project that's in the northeast corner of the city. It opened in 1938, and it was built by Black Americans for Black Americans as part of the New Deal. And I was completely enamored of it. I love the architect, who's also one of my boyfriends, Hilliard R. Robinson. He's an alpha. I loved the architecture itself. It's this beautiful buff brick, this amazing work that's been done there, a lovely, gorgeous courtyard, low rise, low density, designed after the best projects in Europe. And I really fell in love with the earliest residents who moved in. 2,300 of their letters reside in the archives in Washington, D.C. And so all of these Black families during the New Deal and the Depression era are writing in saying that they want a new home for their children and please won't the government help them. And the government did. We actually cared about poor people then. And we built 274 units for Black families. And it was amazing. It continues as an amazing place. And I fell head over heels. And I spent a lot of time in the archives looking up old documents about the site. I went and spent 6 weeks in Europe following on the trail of the architect, going through Vienna and Berlin and looking at all of the modernist projects he built. And I also spent a lot of time on site drawing pictures and taking photographs of the site. And one time I was so excited about the project that I took my undergraduate students at the University of Maryland there. And as we were in the courtyard, I should say I taught Black studies, and as we were in the courtyard there, one of my Black studies students asked the children who were playing in the courtyard, what does this bas-relief mural mean to you? And the kids said, this is the story of the pilgrims, and they said it really proudly. And my Black student, who's studying Black studies, said, actually, no, this is the exact opposite. This is the story of how our people were sold into slavery and then won their freedom. It's in five panels, from slavery to freedom, here in Washington, D.C. And that student then challenged me, saying, you know, Dr. Quinn, you really have to start paying attention to the people who live here now, not just the people in the past. And with that challenge, I started going and hanging out with the kids at Langston Terrace. And we did lots of fun things together, a lot of nutty things together, too, but we did a lot of fun things together, including an arts education camp that we started together. We got on Metro buses and went around the city and went to museums, and we went to the Smithsonian, we went to the Kennedy Center, we went to book signings and artist openings. The kids got so good about talking about the architecture at Langston that when my colleagues, scholarly colleagues, would come from out of town, they would act as the docents of the site and tell them. Now, some of the things they said were tall tales, like Jacob Lawrence lived here. He didn't live in D.C. But, you know, whatever. It was kind of cute. So the kids became good stewards of their property, and we started to get to know each other really well by creating a series of rituals. Now, the kids wouldn't have said it was rituals. I mean, they invited me to basketball games, and I would go and hang out on the playground with them. Sometimes I went to the principal's office to try and figure out what was happening with daydreaming in the class. Sometimes we would have birthday parties. I went to a couple of boy-girl parties, which was really fun. for them, not for me. I just want to be really clear about that. It was mainly about hanging out. We made fun together by learning about the past and about learning about each other. And we played games and we hosted parties, birthday parties, Halloween parties. We had a lot of fun. And with all of this fun and all of this momentum and all of this enthusiasm, when Christmas came, the kids said, "Miss Kelly, we have to have a Christmas party." Sure. Like, having a party is imprinted in my genetic code. My mother's a great hostess. And I knew that I could handle it. I thought that, and the kids thought, that, like, key ingredients for a good Christmas party, maybe as you know, involve a tree and decorations, and the residence council already had that. We needed some music and food, and I thought I could handle that. We all knew we needed a Santa, and I knew I could handle that. And that, to me, a Santa also meant gifts. No problem. I had a lot of rich friends with deep pockets. I could get them to give me things. Okay, fine. So I decided that I would use my family's Santa Claus suit. And this Santa Claus suit was a suit that my mother had handcrafted on her Singer sewing machine. And it has gotten lots of play. Maybe some of you in Baltimore have actually sat on the lap of this Santa suit. It's been to support groups for teenage moms. It's been in parochial schools. It's been in old age homes. It's been at the Flag House Museum. It's been at City Life Museum. It's been at one of my auntie's fourth grade classes. It's been around a lot. And usually it's my father or somebody from my gene pool who's in it. But I decided, I'm not black, I decided that black children needed to have a black Santa Claus. And so I said to the President's Council, I'm going to find a big black man to fill this suit. It's not so easy to find a big black man. So I asked I asked a political scientist, a friend of mine, could he do it? And unfortunately, he had a new baby, and his wife wouldn't let him out of the nursery. And then I was teaching all of these football players, and so I asked the linebackers, could they do it? And they said yes initially, but then they were going on to the bowl game, and their coach told them they couldn't go to a public housing project before the game. So then I went to the Residents Council dejected, and I said, I can't find a black man to fill the Santa suit. And the Residents Council director, Miss McCree, said, don't worry, Miss Kelly, everybody knows Santa's white. And so I asked my father, my big white suburban father from Baltimore, would he come to Langston Terrace and be Santa? No problem. My father is completely intrepid. He'll do anything really for me. He's had lots of experience going into social service agencies with me. In fact, when I was a kid, we did spend a lot of time at Our Daily Bread. He loves to put on a costume and drive in 95. I mean, no problem. So he comes south to Langston. And I had also been in charge of the music. And it's Northeast DC. So really the soundtrack should be some kind of go-go. But I don't know any Junkyard Dogs. So I brought my Chuck Brown, A Very Go-Go Christmas, and a little CD player, and like put it on, whatever. It was a disaster. but I had also thought, because I wanted this party to be a superlative, that I would get some live musicians. And I had two friends who played the accordion in this orchestra called Chaos, the Capitol Hill Accordion Orchestra Society. I didn't realize that children wouldn't cotton to a good polka. So they were there with the squeeze box, and in comes my big white father with a big sack of gifts that I had gotten from my friends. Now, let's be clear. I'm a PhD candidate at the University of Maryland. For me, a really fun gift is a book. And maybe you people who have children actually know, kids don't love books. Around this time, they wanted a gift that required batteries, one that would beep, maybe even like something like a Game Boy. And I was giving them young adult history and biography. Also not a great idea. So as my father's giving out these gifts to the kids, and they're looking at them like, what is this, another textbook? Two friends swooped in, and they kind of saved the day with this activity. Like, one had cotton balls and some kind of craft project, and the other decided, I'm really going to teach them how to waltz, because clearly Miss Kelly doesn't know what she's doing. So I start to walk my father out of the building into the courtyard, and then to take him off to his car, because he had to do another corporal work of mercy that day. We're Roman Catholic. So he goes out to the car, and as we're standing there, and I'm making sure he knows how to get to 295, this Chevy Impala comes barreling towards us. And you know what I'm talking about, like one of those old bucket cars that looks like it was like a police cast-off or something. And it is barreling towards us, careening. I did not need Ralph Nader to tell me unsafe at any speed. I knew that this was trouble. And as it got closer, I looked, and I realized it was like a group of women. It was like two sets of like crazy, sexy, cool, like TLC women. They looked so great. And they just came jumping out of the car and flinging their hair back. Santa, Santa, we have a message for you. And I thought like two things. What the hell is going on? And two, must protect white Santa. So I'm like trying to angle my way in, and the woman keeps coming, Santa, Santa, I have a message for you. And she starts fussing with this plastic bag that's full of something. I'm thinking, oh my God, what is happening? I've brought my father to public housing, and he's about to get propositioned with a dime bag. Like, what? And she says, Santa, my father, so sweet and so suburban, starts saying, ho, ho, ho. And I'm scared. And I start saying, oh, oh, oh. And she says, Santa, and thrust it at him. I want you to have a happy and healthy holiday season. And what it is a plastic bag of condoms and breath mints with a note from this self-help social service agency saying, protect yourself and take care of others this holiday season. And really, isn't that the message for all of us?